This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Hi, I'm Greg Watson. This is Property Matters, a show where we talk all things real estate, whether you're a buyer, a seller, a landlord, a tenant. And I'm here with Billy Tossey. Billy, very nice to have you here today. Yeah, How's things?
Yeah, good, thanks, Greg. And we've got a special guest in studio today, which is really exciting.
Great, great. So we've got Matt Curtis here. Matt's a extremely well-known property manager from Christchurch in Canterbury. And as a good office here, welcome along, Matt.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me today.
And for our listeners, Matt's recognised as one of the best practitioners in the industry around the country, so we look forward to...
It'll be interesting to get his feedback on how the market is in Christchurch, Greg. So later on throughout the show, I know we're going to touch on the market, so it would be interesting to get Matt's opinion.
We are, and here's something that Matt, in a sense, will be able to relate to, and that's that the New Zealand Transport Agency and Inland Revenue building, which is a huge building, there's a picture of it there, Matt, multi-storey building in Palmerston North, had to be evacuated last week, Billy, and this is due to the review of its earthquake rating being too low.
And it's also, Greg, they're relocating their premise as well, and I'm not sure if you've seen where the new premise is. I think it's on, is it on Victoria Ave?
Yes, it's about a three-storey building on Victoria Ave, very nice-looking building actually, but they're not ready to go in there until September, so this has created a bit of an issue. In that building was the national call centre of the Transport Agency, which had 480 staff, and the Inland Revenue had 220. And what they've done is they're not ready to move yet. There's still all sorts going on in that building that's being built, and so a lot of them are now working from home.
Wow.
It's quite interesting, and that's something that in property management channels and in real estate that we all probably often do, is work remotely. But likewise, even with the transport agency, they're saying their 0800 for highways number's still open. It's just that many of the staff working from their houses.
Hmm. So, and that must cover a pretty vast area as well. I mean,
it does. I'd imagine it's most of the country in terms of the call centre. So it just shows you now how you have to wonder with some of these operators whether you actually need big buildings at all.
Mm. Well, a lot of companies are sort of going down the route of working remotely, aren't they? So so here's another example of that as well.
And that's something that has changed in recent years is around that. And talking about some changes, there's the Walkie Award-winning author and a broadcaster, Anthony Funnell. He's a host of an ABC podcast called Future Tense, and he's come out with some biggest predictions for home life, so something a bit lighter, in 2030 and beyond. And the reason I've got this is because we're actually going to move on to Fielding, who's released their plan for the next so many years. But now, this guy is a really good forward thinker, and amongst other things, Vili, he was saying there's not going to be massive changes in the next 10 years, but some things are going to change. So one of the things said was to say goodbye to light switches. Have you seen some of this technology, Matt, at all, where you go into a room and you talk to Alexa or to Google and the lights come on?
Funnily enough, actually, my father and my stepmother have embraced it, and they've left me behind, which is very unusual. He's 75 and can't program his what was a VCR. So, it is taking off, isn't it?
And the sensors as well, Greg, that's sort of definitely, you would have seen many houses now.
Automated lights.
Where you sort of walk into a hallway and the lights turn on. I think the light switch is probably on its way out.
Yes, and another thing he mentioned in the next 10 years is the idea of having a large lounge room with a large TV that everyone congregates around. That's really changing these days. And I know my children are a little older than yours, but already they're starting to branch out into other areas of the house to watch different screens.
Yeah, that's right. And, I mean, television these days, isn't it? There's just different varieties that are coming out all the time and all have different features. And I guess, you know, it is one of those things that will change over time as well.
Yeah, and so what he's saying in this article is that instead of having a big central lounge, you'll have more sort of breakout areas like what you might have at a workplace where you take your laptop because you want to go and watch, you know, a cartoon, and another family member might go and watch Game of Thrones. And it's interesting because not showing our ages too much, but we used to just gather around the TV with the family. And but yeah, things have changed. And so what's going to happen around households, Fanel says, is that you'll be branched out.
Yeah, interesting.
Don't know how I feel about that one. That's a bit.
Yeah, I'm interesting. I mean, you get with the families and everybody's so busy these days, you know, you try and congregate for a meal. Yeah. Are we going to be congregating for a family movie once a week type thing? You know?
Could be. Yeah, that's an interesting thought. And here's something of the slightly more disturbing nature for some of us. And that's the idea in the next 10 years of having smart toilets. Toilets that actually weigh you and provide feedback on what you've been eating. I don't know if I want to know. With my diet, I'm afraid of what my toilet might tell me.
That's a bit scary, isn't it? And, yeah, certainly something that, you know, I guess I'll embrace when that time comes. But for now, I'm quite happy with the old toilet system.
It says it will be able to record your blood sugar, good for diabetics, I suppose, our blood pressure, and positive feedback. So isn't that incredible that they say, I mean, it's not a nice thought, but they'll be able to examine your waste. So. Then the other thing that's happening is we've got this little bit of a tiny home movement and programs on TV that are popular around this, and everyone thinks, oh, everyone's going to tiny homes, etc. But according to this futurist, he's saying, well, no, actually people are going to go larger, and that's an interesting thing as well. He feels that people get sick of cramped spaces. I mean, humans are humans after all.
Well, I guess some people as well. A tiny house would work for them for a very short-term period.
Yeah.
Until, you know, they decide to have a family or circumstances change where, you know, they may need to look after elderly family members as well.
That's right.
The tiny house situation then becomes, you know, inadequate for them.
That's right. And that's where there's probably more of a temporary thing, maybe for young, trendy people, particularly at the moment with house prices being what
I have seen in recent media. A lot of startup companies who are converting things like shipping containers into small homes, and they look fantastic. But yeah, once again, it's sort of like you know, probably just a short term thing.
Yeah, we'll be talking just a little bit later in this program about a company that's creating frames of houses that you can build yourself with bricks that are a little bit like Lego in a sense. But we'll talk about that later. But that's along that tiny house sort of event. But one reason we're talking about the future slightly is that residents in Fielding have been asked to set a blueprint for the town centre, etc. And Manawatu District Mayor Helen Warboys, and this is according to the Manawatu Standard, has asked people to envisage what Fielding's town centre will look like in 2040. And she got overwhelmed with a real enthusiastic flood of responses. Have a guess how many people actually wrote in about this?
Well, Fielding itself is a small, just for Matt, who's from Christchurch, is a small town just on the outskirts of Palmerston North.
Think maybe you might have a couple of dozen interested residents.
Yeah, absolutely.
3,000 people wrote in, and they did it by way of public workshops and post-it notes and so forth. And so they could actually get some really good trends on what the public wants. And the main trends that came through were more open areas for social gatherings, and events to complement the town square, and certainly more parking. Now, the leader in what, Fielding manager Trevor Young, was quoted in this article, and he says there's certain events that just pack out Fielding. The farmers market every Friday, field days, the annual Anzac Day service, etc. And they're looking at considering redeveloping the area where the old New World was, so that maybe that can incorporate some more parking. But at the moment, just thousands of ideas.
Well, and every Friday, Matt, the Fielding has the rural sales sale yard. So it's one of the biggest in the southern hemisphere,
yes,
I think.
Yes, it is. Group. It's very impressive.
So stock from all over the country congregate to this one sale yard where farmers sell or buy stock. Mm-hmm. And it's very busy time from sort of 6 in the morning till about 2 o'clock in the afternoon fielding. So it is a busy little rural town group.
But also the fact that such a huge proportion of people want a say in what's happening shows it's a really strong community.
Absolutely. The engaged community is fantastic, isn't it? With 3,000...
Submissions or viewpoints, and there is a consultation website via the council if people did want to go in and make a submission. So we might move on, Vili. Should we talk a little bit about the market and maybe some predictions and what's been happening?
Yeah, I mean, it's from the rental side of things here in the Manawatū, still very strong. A lot of tenants looking for property. That sort of hasn't changed so much over the last few months. In terms of the amount of rental properties that are on the market, very minimal.
That's correct.
So we're still having the issue with the supply and demand aspect. However, I guess there are a lot of, and we've talked about this, I don't know how many times, Greg, there are still a lot of people migrating to Palmerston North. I've had a number of phone calls from people outside of different regions who are relocating to Palmerston North. So
absolutely. I'm not sure if you're finding this, Matt, in parts of Canterbury or in Christchurch, but Auckland, 33,000 people moved out of Auckland to move to areas that are a little bit more affordable. Many of those are around Auckland, but are you seeing anyone thinking, I mean, are the prices in Christchurch for renting or selling much different?
The prices, we've had a little bit of the opposite. We've had an oversupply of rental properties for some years, and that's just starting to come to an end now with numbers dropping. But we're starting to see new people come into Christchurch. Soon after the earthquakes, we saw every second person was from outside of Christchurch, or they'd owned their own home and were looking to rent. And now we've gone through a few years of basically the opposite. And we're just seeing a stronger rental market now, but just fractionally. But over the next 3 or 4 years, I think we'll see some great growth in Christchurch and some good rental increases too.
It's certainly tipped to be one of the areas that's going to grow really well in the next few years. Mm-hmm. And I'll come to that soon, because this article's from Stuff Business, and the headline was that house prices nationwide are tipped to soar by 20% over the next 4 years. And that can sound a bit extreme. This is Treasury's prediction. And they've looked at a number of areas indeed. And then the article went and broke down a bit where things have gone and where they're going to. One of the things that was interesting was that just in the median house prices in New Zealand just in May, when compared to a year ago, have gone up 3.2%. So Treasury is predicting maybe a bit more growth. Mm. But if you look at the regions outside of Auckland, there's 7.2%. And that's where the median prices are up to 487,000 now from 455. And the signs are that even though the Auckland property market's fallen a little, it's not going to stay that way for long. There's just too much migration still, and still a bit of a shortage of housing. This has an effect, of course, on the first home buyers, as we know. But the Treasury is predicting that 20%. I know that, Vili, we've spoken about Manawatū, and I have little doubt that that would happen here, but that probably wouldn't happen everywhere.
No, I wouldn't have thought. I don't think it's going to go to that extent. I mean, I'd like to think it's very stable here at the moment. We're not going to see any huge decrease in that, but we're not going to see huge increases as well. So I think for the Manawatū, I wouldn't pick it to increase to that sort of magnitude, Greg?
Yeah, I guess that 20% over 4 years, I mean, in some areas property can approximately double every 10 years. I suppose in some sense it's not out of context. The thing is, when people are guessing regions, it's really a little bit of crystal ball gazing. There's a senior property economist at CoreLogic who's Kelvin Davidson, and he was saying that the health growth, the house price growth is causing problems for first home buyers. The REINZ Chief Executive Officer, Bindi Norwell, said that she felt the forecast just reflected that the economy is good. Mm. Even though it's a little bit hard to get money from the bank for some people, the interest rates were low. And Andrew King, Property Investors Federation, felt that properties It's a good time to buy now, which is interesting.
Well, interest rates are at an all-time low, aren't they?
Incredibly low, yeah.
So, you know, I think the lowest I've seen so far is 3.8, so not a bad time to buy, I guess.
Yeah, that's correct. And the there is a follow-up article to that where Stuff Business tried to predict where the capital gains are likely to be. And they were saying that if you bought a median-priced house in Auckland at the end of 2013, you would have paid just over $500,000. 6 years later, they're worth $800,000. And here's some of the places that that they predict might be quite good for the next few years. Now, it goes without say, as we've said many times on the show, Manawatu is a good one, but this article mentions Hawke's Bay. There's been some big changes there. And the wider Wellington area is one that's going up nicely. Dunedin seems to always do quite well, Matt.
Yeah, it does. There's going to be an interesting market with healthy homes and the changes that are going to happen, particularly in the Dunedin market.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. They would have probably the biggest. That's where you do think of the images in your mind of the homes that are with.
You certainly do, don't you?
Yeah.
Sort of older sort of properties that need a lot of work to bring it up to that compliance, don't they? So, yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how those sort of regions, Greg, you know, sort of bring those sorts of quality of properties up to that standard. Dunedin certainly one that I think will be heavily watched in terms of compliance.
Absolutely, and here's one for you, Matt. Tom Linton, who's the chief data scientist at homes.co.nz, to quote him, he said, "My pick for the next few years is Christchurch. As unlike other New Zealand cities, prices have not risen significantly in the last 5 years or so." He says, "The remainder of the earthquake damaged properties will finally be repaired or replaced, leaving higher value housing stock. And the infrastructure investment in the city will continue attracting more people to the region." So do you feel positive for house prices?
Yeah, I do. I mean, historically, there has been sort of those 4 or 5 years, and certainly we were outside that cycle with the earthquakes, but 4 or 5 years of very limited growth, and then we see some increase in valuation sort of the next 4 or 5 years, which we're sort of due for. We're going to end up with potentially two quite separate markets, being the post-quake builds and your pre-quake builds that have been repaired, and there are obviously some issues, well-publicised issues with some of the repairs done on some properties.
Sure, and that'll just, I guess, come out in the wash. There'll be buyers for both, as we know in real estate, there always is. There's a well-known investor, Graham Fowler, who's written a number of books. He had an interesting comment on which areas are likely to gain. He said that even investors shouldn't focus too much on trying to pick where the next boom would be, that in the 25 years he's been investing, property goes up and goes down. And he says if you compare Auckland to Palmerston North or Hamilton to Dunedin and so forth, over time they all stay within a very close range and relative to each other. So that's quite interesting. What he's really saying there is that property just performs well over time.
Mm-hmm. It's long-term, isn't it? Long-term gain that you're looking for.
Absolutely. Now, this next article, Vili, I put in for a bit of comic relief, which is a bit mean to people from Auckland, but this is where Century 21 National Manager Ryan Mitchell is quoted in Property Noise as saying that the deposit rules are cruelly shutting out first home buyers, the Auckland real estate boss says. And the reason I put this in for comedy value, Matt and Vili, is that you might recall that Auckland, the banks, when they had to bring in the restrictions, were still lending mainly to people in Auckland because they would bend the rules for those people and not for the rest of the country, which killed at least the market in Manawatu for quite some time. And so to say that they're being cruelly shut out because of the size of the deposits, it's not something they're used to, I suppose.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep. So that was quite. So as you know, with the LVRs, they need at least 20% of the value. And what happens? What I'm referring to a bit is the discretionary spending that the banks can. Well, not discretionary spending. The banks have discretion to say, okay, most of the time you need 20% deposit, but a certain proportion we can lend at less. Right. And what's happened was that's gone out of Auckland because there's other regions that are growing nicely, like Christchurch's likely to, Manawatu is going well, and that just means that the banks have loosened up on our area finally, and the Aucklanders are finally getting a little bit tough. another one, and I don't mean to pick on Auckland in particular, but why not? Auckland property prices experienced the biggest drop in 5 years, and gee, I don't know. We haven't been around that long, but if we think of where property prices have gone in Auckland upwards in the last 10 or 15 years, really this is probably just a bit of a headline grab.
Mm.
with regards saying that they've fallen 1.9%, which, as you mentioned earlier, if you've owned one for 6 years, you've earned about 300,000 equity anyway.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, so obviously it's not a sour grapes. I mean, hands up if you wished you'd bought a house in Auckland 20 years ago, but that's just the, no sour grapes here.
It's interesting, Greg, because I had a friend who's just recently bought in Auckland, and he was sort of tossing up whether or not to make that step into doing it, just with, I guess, what we're, some of the figures we're seeing.
Yeah.
But it's, for some people, it's like, when do you buy? If you're in those major cities where, the median price is very high, or you're competing against a lot of other people, and, you're paying close to $1 million for a home, it's like, when do you take that plunge? Yeah. Do you wait, or do you go, or do you get on the ladder? Or?
Yeah, it's really hard to know. I think the main thing is if you can service the loan and weather yourself against potential increases in the bank lending rates, then that's probably the best way to go, whatever market you're in.
I guess the positive is like we said earlier, low interest rates, so it does make it a little bit more affordable.
And if you are in it for the long term, then it probably doesn't matter too much when you get in.
Yeah, I think time is your friend when it comes to property.
Most
and
definitely.
Just owning that. And here's somewhere from the I wish I had invested in this spot a year ago category, and that's the Gisborne house prices. Here's a headline for you. The Real Estate Institute says Gisborne house prices rose $2,645 a day May, which is incredible. Now, Gisborne, median price, I don't know if you saw this, Matt, but it rose by 54.4% year on year. So the median price a year ago, $285,000, is now $440,000.
Incredible.
Isn't that incredible? Just shows, and there's a number of reasons for that, and that are localised, but still, wow, talk about a catch-up in dramatic fashion.
Small regions doing very well.
Yeah, in fact, 11 of out of the 16 regions, median prices have increased over that time to May. Gisborne, obviously, the most dramatic. Southland up almost 17%, Manawatu, Whanganui, 14%, Hawke's Bay around 10%. And Otago 8.2. So again, just catch ups around the regions possibly people see those as more affordable.
Mm. Sort of filter effect, isn't it?
Yeah. And also there's an unusual effect that you have on any rising market. And I don't know if you'd agree with this, Matt, which is that if you're a homeowner and you own a home, you might be a bit reluctant to sell because it's going up in value. Mm-hmm. And this causes an effect where there's not very many homes to choose from. So even if you did want to sell, and this is what's happening in Manawatu where stocks are down 20%, if you do sell first, where do you go? Because people aren't selling at the moment. So there's sometimes where you have the rising house prices, you often have the reduction in houses available, supply and demand.
Yeah.
And you've found in Christchurch there's sort of almost like an equalisation to a certain extent in the markets on the way up there. So,
absolutely, yeah.
No, that's great. Now, the one thing we thought, since I've been talking mainly sales properties today, is an article in Stuff Business. And the economists in general that are quoted in this article are saying a one-year rate is probably the cheapest way to fix your mortgage at the moment. And they go on to say that interest rates are at historic lows. You can get one or two rates available below 3.9%, as I think you mentioned earlier, Matt, and that's pretty good. So what they're saying is it might be good to, if you want to fix in that low rate, that they don't foresee that it will change much in the next year. Mm-hmm. So then you could fix something in a bit longer, possibly at that time. So
good news for investors, do you think, Greg?
Yeah, it's certainly much easier to service the loans and to get into a cash flow positive situation. Mm-hmm. Investors, of course, have the have a little advantage potentially on first home buyers where they can use equity to cover that percentage that they might otherwise need to have as a deposit.
And the Reserve Bank have just lowered that requirement as well, or just recently, haven't they?
Yes, they have, yeah. And it's become easier for investors as well. But the first home buyers, they've been having a tough time, which leads on to a really interesting poll that was conducted, and this results in Stuff. This was conducted by Westpac, and they polled 1,000 people about their opinion on parents assisting their children into their first homes. It's quite interesting because More than half of parents said they would loan money interest-free, and only 38% would actually expect it to be paid back. So, you guys, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's becoming a lot more common is that essentially the inheritance is being used earlier on for kids to either study, buy a house, and improve their lives from an early stage rather than get a cash flow when they're perhaps nearly retired.
Mm. Absolutely, and there's more than half that are being willing to act as a guarantor. And I think this is something that maybe our parents didn't have to wrestle with because it was quite a lot easier.
Yeah, for me, parents definitely went guarantor during house buying. So it was, I guess, just that security and that backstop.
And two-thirds of the respondents actually said that they would feel bad asking for their parents for help, which is natural, I guess. Plenty of the parents actually said they would be very likely, almost one in three, to assist with childcare. So that's something if it allows the parents to be working and moving themselves forwards, because the hardest thing's getting underway, and that's where having that ability to lend is pretty important. Just before we wrap up, we've just got a couple of minutes to go. Earlier on, I talked about a company that's looking at prefab homes, and there's this company called EcoKit, that's E-C-O-K-I-T, a type of property that can be built as quickly as 4 days. And this was designed by an Australian company called EcoKit, and they're quite hard case looking, and I'd encourage you to have a look at them. They're quite an interesting design, but they're a combination of Lego and IKEA, they're described on stuff.co.nz. And what I liked about this, if I could find the part, and I'll just have to turn a couple of pages here, is it says here, the homes are basically a portal frame that you assemble on the ground and stand up, and then you fill the frame with brick-like components. It's very easy, says the lady. She goes, everything fits together like Lego, comes with an instruction manual like IKEA, comes in a box, and all the parts, the fasteners, and tools. So they're actually wanting to sell to the end customer so you can bypass a builder. And a funny quote in here was that the younger generation is returning to wanting to be able to create something with their hands. Imagine creating your house and having the satisfaction of looking back and saying, OMG, I created that.
What sort of prices, Greg?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. So in Australian dollars, there's two designs, a two-bedroom single-story for $104,000 and one for, which is the three-bedroom double-story of $146,000 Australian dollars. So doesn't include the interior finishes or installation. So it is a bit of a DIY. I'm not sure if I would spend $104,000 Australian on a Lego kit. knowing my construction skills. But.
Look, I always end up with an extra screw or a bolt when I put a desk together, so putting a house together is probably not best for me, but perhaps others.
I wonder if the pieces hurt your feet if you stand on them on the construction site. I'm not too sure. But folks, that's all we've got time for this week. I'd like to thank Matt Curtis. Wonderful
seeing you. Thanks,
Greg. Thank you. Billy, it's lovely to have you here.
Thanks, Greg.
And from me, Greg Watson, this is Property Matters. We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we'll see you next week.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.